There is absolutely no question that our world has dramatically changed in many ways across the history of humanity. We now live in a data society. Data is all important. Everything you see in this video, including the recording of my voice, represents digital data, as does so much else in society today, ranging from medical records, science, YouTube videos, banking, military applications, ebooks, and just about everything you can imagine. It's all data. While we're doing it today on a truly grand scale, however, humans have always collected data and passed it down. This started word of mouth. At the dawn of anatomically modern humanity, we inherited tool making from our hominid precursors, very likely through teaching as the species diverged. Early humans then once again very likely taught that knowledge to new generations of children. Then someone realized that you can paint a cave wall, carve on a tree, or make a rock carving, thus serving as a data storage medium of sorts. And these early methods can still be useful today, despite being tens of thousands of years old. The prehistoric cave paintings, such as those at Chauvet and Lascaux Caves in France, preserve images of long extinct species from as long ago as 40,000 years ago, inadvertently handing us data about those animals, especially in what they looked like in terms of things that do not fossilize. Extinct cave lions, for example, were well known from fossils and were about 10% larger than the lions of today and once ranged very widely, but went extinct near the end of the last ice age. But that's well within human prehistory. We were already an ancient species by that time, so we knew what these lions were and interacted with them, perhaps sometimes unpleasantly. But what was unclear was just what these lions actually looked like outside of what their bones tell us. A total unknown until recently was whether the males of this species had a mane, like modern lions in Africa do, or if they lacked it, like the other great cats. The paintings suggest that they mostly lacked it, though some seem to suggest it had a very subtle mane, but nothing like a modern species of male lion. People thousands of years ago told us what they saw, and the paintings often come with enigmatic and intriguing dots and dashes and symbols that may have originally been intended as signposts to tell any other humans passing through what species were in the area for hunting and when the animals gave birth, if one theory is correct. You can then point to any number of human activities from then until now and characterize it as data collection. The passing of agricultural knowledge and plant life cycles generation to generation. The selective breeding of domesticated plants, some of which are very old, with unrecorded prehistory, such as certain chili peppers that we still use today, that may go back before the golden age of the Maya in Central America. The Maya themselves recorded data with their writing system, as did many cultures in the world, eventually giving way to the advent of books and printing and the preservation of detailed records. Indeed, the astronomical records of Chinese astronomers over 1,000 years ago tell us about seeing a guest star in the sky, which was the supernova that created today's Crab Nebula. Astronomers still use data collected sometimes thousands of years ago. This march of data collection continues, and at no time has it been as large and extensive as it is today, and it's only going to keep growing, or so we hope. The problem is, like in the past with all of the lost data we know about but no longer have, like the many lost texts of the Greeks and Romans that we know once existed, we might have references to them, but we do not have the actual original text today. Our modern data can get likewise destroyed. It is not invincible. Really important data can be lost on Earth through cyber attacks, floods, wildfires, regular fires, heat, hardware failure, and any number of other natural and artificial disasters. Even though our technology was invented here, the reality is that out of the entire solar system's solid surfaces, Earth does not rank highly on the list of hospitable places for a data center. Wouldn't really want to put one on Venus, of course, but the moon and some of the other airless moons of the solar system are far more ideal places for long-term preservation of anything. With our world being so dependent on our data, with unprecedented access to the moon becoming available for private companies, firms such as Lone Star have been able to acquire seed money to make a data center on the moon a reality. Essentially, how data centers work now is that they consist of connected servers that store the data. The number of these on Earth is growing so fast that they're eating up electricity at a very rapidly increasing rate, which is environmentally unhealthy overall, but also increasingly expensive. We already store data in space. The Voyager spacecraft, for example, both have digital tape recorders that take the data for later transmission to Earth. But on a greater scale for Earth's data, an experimental miniature example of space data storage was performed on the International Space Station. And eventually, under NASA's Commercial Lunar Payload Program, further experiments will be deployed on the Moon as part of the overall Artemis program to return humans to the Moon. This could in turn someday lead to lunar data centers, where our data is stored in a much more safe, secure, and reliable manner than what we currently have on Earth. But we can envision this a step further. And this is where further future thinking can be employed as to what we might use this kind of technology for in the centuries to come. In addition to our mundane records and data storage, we can go further. If it can be made to work, a data center on the Moon can last a very, very long time, so long as its infrastructure, energy sources, and hardware are maintained. But even if they aren't and everything mechanically breaks down, that equipment is just going to sit there indefinitely, and the data may be retrievable from a dead system thousands of years from now. Firstly, however, the Moon is not without its erosion. It's just incredibly slow. It's bombarded constantly with energetic particles and micrometeorites, and also big meteorites for that matter, that will erode equipment on the surface. It just takes a lot longer. Some have said that the footprints and Apollo equipment left on the Moon will last billions of years, but that's not really the case. It's somewhere around 10 to 100 million years before the erosion processes on the Moon, known as lunar gardening, render little or no trace of those landings. The solution? Bury it. Anything buried on the Moon will last potentially far, far longer. And the Moon is not alone here. There are other suitable bodies in the solar system. Though the Moon is uniquely good for our data storage because it's close, with rapid communications times. The lag is only just over 1 second. Any other body communicating with Earth is going to take a lot longer. If you were to put a data center on, say, Callisto at Jupiter, the lag can be as long as 53 minutes. Not great for two-way communications, and is anything but rapid. But that assumes the purpose is to actively communicate with it, as close to real-time as you can get. There are ways that might not be the case. One of these is the cold preservation of the core human data-ome for posterity or discovery by aliens, perhaps long after we've gone extinct. Think about that. Everything we've ever learned, preserved for conceivably billions of years for an alien civilization, or even a new civilization, from a new species on Earth that rises to intelligence long after our extinction, to find. Imagine that for a moment. This planet still has plenty of time for our civilization to end and our extinction to happen. Say for a moment that another species then rises to intelligence. Let's say it's the octopus or squid, and they venture out into space. All they might know of us is that they find our fossils, and occasional bits of Pepsi bottles, and long bricked cell phones in the geologic record, only to find our entire data-ome preserved on Callisto when they get out there. They then find recipes for fried calamari, not good. But they'd also find Mozart, pictures of our architecture, records of our cultures and languages. This theme has been depicted in science fiction, the classic Star Trek The Next Generation episode The Inner Light being an excellent example, but is also something we've already done with the Voyager Gold Records and Pioneer Plaques, which record albeit limited data that aliens that may find them may or may not be able to decipher. But those forms of data storage have extreme longevity. The Voyager records were designed to last a billion years, but may actually last far longer because their orbits around the center of the galaxy will oscillate, meaning they will spend most of their time out of the direct galactic plane and its denser dust. Thus, they may last closer to 5 billion years, at least partially intact enough for someone to know that they were technological in origin, if not understand the message. That said, there are tons of wild cards. Past a certain period, we can't tell what stars the voyages will pass and how close. Projecting the future and the past of the galaxy's movements of stars only goes so far, before gravitational influences and movements just make it impossible to predict. It's even possible one could encounter a star system that damages it in the far future that hasn't even formed yet. It would not be a good thing for the records if they passed through a star system with a dusty planet-forming disk, for example. Though the chances of that versus interstellar dust is far lower. Another wild card are the effects of dust from the future collision and merger with the Andromeda Galaxy, which is bringing dust of its own along. But there is one last possibility here. If we can deposit our data ohm in the outer solar system on some stable airless body, then in principle anyone passing through the solar system in the past could have done that as well. There would be incentive to do this. Anyone passing through at any time in the last 3.8 billion years would have known Earth had life. While on the off chance that a civilization might arise there someday, why not leave a record of yourself buried on the moon? No truly comprehensive searches for this have ever been done on the moon. It's enormous, and without knowing where to look in our images, we do not have good chances of seeing something if it's there. But it might be evidence of this if you see a structure, say a square or other oddity buried, recognizable either through visual evidence on the surface or ground-penetrating radar. Here, artificial intelligence could be employed to sift through the images and look for these kinds of out-of-place shapes. I would hazard a guess that the chances of finding something are low. One could conjecture it's low for any form of SETI, but the payoff would be huge. Imagine finding a trove of data on a moon of the solar system that tells us not just the history and culture of an alien civilization, but potentially a complete understanding of science. I'd say that would be every bit as good as first contact, and you can take it further. As we spread our wings and travel interstellar space, if we ever do, then we'll need to search all suitable bodies in ancient star systems to see if there was once someone there. Thanks for listening. I am futurist and science fiction author John Michael Godier, currently wondering about the future squid civilization that will come to rule Earth. I wonder what their golden age of television is going to be like. Such shows as Galabulon and Mr. Wiggles, and Star Trek. Yes, just more Star Trek, this time with a squid captain and a Vulcan octopus. And of course, old videos recovered from Callisto, featuring the primate David Attenborough in his natural habitat, all with commercial breaks for beak care products. And those transmissions are the first thing aliens see from Earth, and first contact is made. And be sure to check out my books at your favorite online book retailer and subscribe to my channels for regular in-depth explorations into the interesting, weird, and unknown aspects of this amazing universe in which we live.